Session number 14806, Edmund Murray, part one.
Right, well, thank you very much indeed. Thank you also for presenting me with your autobiography sign, which I wasn't expecting at all. Welcome to the Imperial War Museum. Thanks very much indeed for coming along. So we're going to discuss today how you joined the Foreign Legion, I expect. Your career in the Legion, various other things to do with SOE type activities, and also in Special Branch in the Metropolitan Police, and as Churchill's bodyguard as part of that. Right, can I? Whereabouts do you come from originally?
I was born in a place called Burnet Field in County Durham. It's about 15 miles, I suppose, from Newcastle. So I was of a mining family. My father was miner.
Right. Many in the family?
There was my parents, and then I've got two brothers older than me and two sisters younger.
All right, so quite a large family.
Quite a good family, yes.
So, you went to school locally, or...?
Well, I went to the primary school, and then I was quite brilliant there, as a matter of fact. Won
really?
Quite a number of books, and of course passed the examination for secondary school quite easily, and so went to the secondary school, which turned into a grammar school after a few years, and there I stayed for, I suppose, into my fourth year.
Uh-huh.
But then the road to university seemed to be rather boring. People seemed rather boring. I was an adventurous type, there's no doubt about it, and I used to get up to all sorts of adventurous things as far as scouting and that, you know, and was concerned. Organized my own little club, which carried on the work of scouting, and that was when I was 12 years old. Really? 12, 13.
What sort of, you say, a club? A club to do with scouting?
Well, it was actually begun because of articles, I suppose, in the boy's own paper,
mm-hmm.
which sort of told us as young people to get together and know each other and get up to activities that were going to be useful to us in our future life and keep us out of trouble, mainly, I think. And so, although we did not have any supervision in any shape or form, we did have fun, and I suppose there were about a dozen of us, and we enjoyed it very, very much indeed. We didn't require any supervision, mm-hmm. because we had our own place, more or less, out in the wilds, in the quarries, shall we say, and we got up to all sorts of pranks, but between ourselves, we didn't go into the urban districts at all.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and then I was going to grammar school, as I said before, and then suddenly, but things were getting rather difficult at home. Both of my brothers came out of the mines and went down to London to look for work. The eldest one joined the Holborn Restaurant, which used to be one of the best restaurants in town in those days. It's now a bank in the corner of Kingsway and High Holborn. And he enjoyed it there, and he used to send money home, which helped. And then my second brother went down to London, and he immediately got into the police force down at Stoke Newington, PC 712. And he used to send money home, of course. And then this, I said to myself, well, this road to university, I'm getting bored stiff by it. And so I persuaded my parents to let me leave school and go down to London as well. And it was ideal, really, at the time, because my uncle, who lived in Chingford, was married and had a son. He died just a few months ago, one of the last survivors, maybe the last survivor of the Gallipoli campaign.
Really?
And he himself wrote two books, Gallipoli as I Saw It and Call to Arms. He was a big friend of General Freyberg and assisted him quite a lot, I believe, in the making of the General's autobiography, right. And the general's gone now, of course. But he was going on a tour to the Dardanelles, just at that particular time when I came down to London. I think it was about June 1934.
Mm-hmm.
And he asked me, he suggested that I look after the house in Chingford while they were away. And so that's how I came to London. I went out and got a job with Joe Sainsbury's at Walthamstow, and I was there for quite a while. Well, several months, and then I was transferred to northwest London, to Bromsbury, Killeran. Yes. So I stayed with Joe Sainsbury's for 18 months and then left my own accord. There again, I didn't seem to be progressing very, very much indeed. It wasn't terribly exciting selling eggs and butter and bacon, although I was a pretty dab hand at it. And then I had several jobs within the next few months, mainly in the grocery area. And then, I decided to join the Irish Guard. I went into Whitehall, into Great Scotland Yard there. And this of course, was in the, as I said, in 1934-35, when the repercussions of the general strike were still very, very active indeed. And so I went to Great Scotland Yard, into the recruiting office, and went up there, and there's this great big regimental sergeant major who asked me what I wanted, and so I went, the Marines? No. Navy? No. Full up. Everything was full up. And the name was Murray, of course, which can be an Irish name, I suppose, although I think it has Scottish. I have Scottish antecedents. And so I said, well, that's a pity. And so I was going out the door, and he called after me. He said, hang about, Mr. Murray. He said, do you have anything at all Irish in your family? And so I said, well, as a matter of fact, I remember that my grandfather's sister married an Irish sailor called Mulcahy. So he says, that's enough. He said, that's good enough. He said, no, do you play football? And I said, well, yes. And he has Sainsbury's. And even at school, I used to play right half, in the defence. Right, he says. Now I'm going to show you to the door there. And he said, when you go in there and see the captain, as soon as he asks you if you've got anything to say, he said, tell him you've got an aunt called Mulcahy, and you play right half. He says, because we need a right half down at Caterham. And that's how I got into the Irish Guards, and went down to Caterham. And I was there for exactly 28 days. Not because I disliked military life, I was enjoying it down there. The regimental sergeant major and me were the only two English people in the Irish Guards and the 5th Battalion, I think it was, down at Caterham. But I had trouble because I had a girlfriend living in Dagenham, and she and her parents didn't like the idea of her going out with a man in uniform. And so they kept on and on at me until I bought myself out for £12. And it was, Captain Dawney. It was quite a bit of money in those days. Captain Dawney who signed, and I just can't put my hand on the official sheet. But Captain Dawney signed my certificate saying, saying nice things about me. And I got £12 back from them for the sale of my personal effects, whatever they were, about a fortnight later. By which time I was, during that summer, I was deck steward on one of the boats, the Crested Eagle.
Yes. Just tell me, you went down to Caterham, and how was that? You went in and you had all the medicals and all the rest of it.
Oh yes, all the medicals.
Yes.
And I was.
And you started the.
And all the training, basic training.
And then you'd signed the papers, but you actually had to buy your way out as soon as you had signed on in those mm-hmm. days. And they actually took all your civilian possessions away from you, did they?
It would seem so. Yes, I'm sure that's how it must have been. Because I went down there in civilians, just like one goes to, into the French Foreign Legion in civilians.
Yes.
And so that's what it must have been. But I got £12 for them anyhow, about a fortnight afterwards.
But what clothes did you have to walk away from Caterham in?
Good. I suppose my girlfriend brought me a suit.
Okay, right. Okay, curious. So you were there.
No, it's interesting. I've not really gone into it. I remember that they sent them. They sent me £12 for the sale of my personal effects.
What was the... I mean, you were only there for a month. I mean, what was the atmosphere at that time? It was very, very, very pre-war, would you say?
It was very active. It was, lots of spit and polish.
Yeah.
There was one Irishman, particular Irishman, who didn't like my face. And he was the only one. And I remember one Sunday morning after parade, I was very, very thirsty. You remember, it was in summer. And he was on light duties. He had a plaster of Paris hand. He'd sprained his hand or something. And it was his right hand. I give you my word of honor that it was his right hand.
Right.
And so he was put on light duties, and he was polishing the taps and all that sort of thing. When I came straight off parade and upstairs, of course, I shouldn't have been there. Mm. But I went up, and I already had a mug. And so I went in there, and he said, "You're not allowed in here, do you see?" And shouted that at me in his Irish accent. And so I said, "Well, I just came up for a glass of water," and bang! With his plaster of Paris, he hit me in the eye. That was the way he dealt with it. And then, of course, when I was up in front of the captain afterwards, I swore blind to say it was with his left hand that he hit me. Nevertheless, I came out of the Irish Guards with a beautiful black eye. But by that time, he was in Woolwich Hospital when I came out.
He came out the second place winner, did he?
He came out second, yes. I'd been taught boxing during my youth.
Right.
My brother was taking it up rather seriously, his second brother. And then he hit me on the heart on one occasion, on one training occasion. We used to train down in Newcastle with Seaman Watson, one of the welterweight champions. And he hit me over the heart once. He said, "You know, you're not going into boxing." And I went down, and I was out for about 5 minutes. Couldn't breathe at all.
Really?
And that put me off boxing. But, you know, I had quite a lot of training. And so I could use my fists. So came out of the Irish Guards. They went onto as a deck steward onto the Crested Eagle, which was one of the small boats that went down to Dunkirk. And I was there.
From where? From
Tower Pier, London.
Well, from Tower Pier to Dunkirk, as a service.
No. Ah. It used to go down the Thames, down to Southend and Clacton, and back again, of course, in the day. But eventually I learned, when I tried to find out later on something about the Crested Eagle, you know, in order to write about it in the book, the only thing that I could find out about it was that it went down at the evacuation of Dunkirk.
Right. It sank.
Okay,
so this was the Crested Eagle was, a leisure
steamer. One of the paddle steamers going from Tower Pier down to Clacton. And it was fun, really, you know, and then I came back, and of course that was only a summer job. And then I went back to my girlfriend's, and he had a newsagent, and I used to live in the house and deliver newspapers and collect monies and all that sort of thing, be a general dog's body, which, you know, it was quite nice being with the girlfriend all the time. And then I got a job at Plessy's Electrics at Ilford. Plessy's quite famous, you know.
Sure.
And I was there for a few months, but it wasn't terribly exciting, and there was only my charge hand and myself looking after a whole bevy of girls, you know, about 50 girls, and that was a bit upsetting, to say the least of it.
Well, upsetting? How?
Well, because I had a girlfriend.
Ah, right, I see what you mean.
And I could have had, you know, girlfriends. And so I was there for a while, and then I came, and my brother got me a job at the Holborn restaurant. As in the same position as he was holding, as a checking clerk. And I enjoyed that, and I met up with quite a lot of people up on the balcony there, and I learned quite a bit about cooking, and although it was, you know, first of all, I started washing dishes. No, I started sweeping floors, first of all, and the stairs, and then started washing dishes up on the balcony, and then, of course, got this job of checking clerk, which is the first step, maybe the second or third step up the way to management.
Right.
And so we were living, my brother and I were living in Hampstead at the time, and I used to play football and cricket with the Holborn Frascati, and yes, very enjoyable it was. And I suppose
a team to do with the restaurant, or?
Yes, with the Frascati's, because it was Holborn and Frascati's. and they used to run a football team, and then on occasions, oh yes, then my brother. How did he? No, he was still there. Suddenly one Sunday morning in 1937, the month of May, I just got up at early in the morning, about 7 o'clock in Hampstead, you see, my brother was there. What are you doing? I said, well, I'm thinking about going for a row in Regent's Park. And so I went out. I had about £20 in my pocket, a grey sports jacket and grey flannels, brown shoes, collar and tie. And I walked down to Victoria Station. This is out of the blue, except almost out of the blue, shall we say, because that was a Sunday morning. The Holborn restaurant wasn't open on Sundays, but it was open on Saturday. My brother was off on the Saturday, and on the Saturday morning, when I was up on the balcony with Monsieur Roland, committed suicide a few years afterwards, apparently. But Monsieur Roland, lovely French chef, wonderful character. And I said to Roland, I said, Roland, if I'm not here Monday morning when my brother arrives, tell him I've joined the French Foreign Legion. And so he said, you're mad. And he, of course, it's French accent and all the rest of it. And we used to speak in French quite a lot. French was used in those days in the hotels. And he said, no, you're mad. And I said, no, I said, let's have a glass of wine. And so he poured me a glass of wine from the red wine, which was always on his kitchen table. He was a lovely, lovely character. And we used to have wonderful people coming up to the balcony there, do you see? Very, very important personalities used to come up there. And so
who did you see there, for instance? Or any reminiscences about?
No, except one. He owned the Walthamstow Stadium, Greyhound Stadium.
Yeah.
There's a writer with the same name, not Charteris.
Okay.
But I might recall it. And he used to come out there with his girlfriend one evening, of course. He never used to drink wine, never. But his girlfriend used to drink. And I remember on one occasion, the head waiter came down and he said, there's going to be bloody trouble now. And so we asked him, nearly had it. Picked up Chandler.
Okay.
And he picked up his glass of mineral water and threw it into the girlfriend's face, do you see? Well, it's not done, really. But he was such an, he had so much money, that character did, that no notice was taken of it. They carried on. He always had Surrey chicken.
Uh-huh.
Surrey chicken, always Surrey chicken. Every time he came in, he used to come in weekly, perhaps more often than that. And Bram Martin and people like that used to, there was an orchestra always downstairs, do you see, with Bram Martin and Ted Heath and people like that used to come and play there. And it was a well-known place. And I can't remember.
When did that shut, then, this restaurant? From a well-known location?
I don't know. It must have been after the war.
Uh-huh.
After the war. I don't know.
Were there are so many of these Italian little eateries around there. Has there been traditionally around that Holborn area many Italians? I don't know.
I feel sure, yes, but probably more further up towards Soho.
Ah, yes.
And then
yes.
Frascati's, of course, were the main people in the Holborn and Frascati hotels. They were only the hotels at that time that I knew about. Mm. There was the Holborn and the Frascati, which was up just off Piccadilly there.
Mm-hmm.
Upper Regent Street, I think it is.
Okay.
Or Tottenham Court Road, no, Upper Regent Street. Mm. And so the whole thing was called the Holborn and Frascati's, and they used to bottle their own wines and things like this. But I'm quite sure that Frascati's still, still holds sway in the West End of London.
Okay.
And have probably got a lot of establishments that they own without their name appearing. But the Holborn, I feel sure it was after the war, because shortly after I got back, so it must have been in 47 or 48, that I drove up there to have a look at the Holborn restaurant. Mm-hmm. Of course, it was gone.
Ah, okay.
And it was a massive new bank. I think it's Midland, but I'm not sure. Yeah. But the Holborn restaurant used to be made of the finest and oldest marble, apparently, in the whole of England. Mm-hmm. And so it was a place. Sure. It was a renowned place. And they used to have Masonic meetings and things like that.
So you were going to go to Regent's Park. Where were you living in Hampstead, out of interest?
Gayton Road, which is, in a Bedsit. It's, you come down, what's the name of the walk? It's just behind, just if you're looking at the, up towards Hampstead Pond.
Yes.
You know, and the underground station's at the corner on the right-hand side. Well, so you leave the underground station on the left, Well Walk.
Oh, yes, right.
Well Walk goes down there. And there's an important house there. Poet used to live there, I believe.
Was that
it's about 500 yards away from the
right up, station. So right up the top of the
Yes, yes.
Okay, so you went down to Regent's Park to row, but you didn't.
But I didn't. I went straight to Victoria Station.
Right.
And bought a 24-hour return ticket to Boulogne.
Right.
Which meant...
You had a passport?
No.
You didn't need one then, I don't...
Not on a 24-hour ticket.
Okay.
I believe. But I can't remember.
No, no.
I mean, the... reasoning didn't arise. And so it was the Golden Arrow, which went down as far as Dover and then carried on to Folkestone. And so that was the way I went, Folkestone, Boulogne. Mm. Went across to Boulogne and went to the Gendarmerie.
Yes.
My French was pretty good, you see, college French. And I'd been very good at it in school. And they said, no, you can't.
It's up at the top, is it? Top of the town, the gendarmerie. Okay. Keep going.
Can't remember
I'm
where it was.
Right.
But I remember going there, and they told me, no, the nearest place to join the Legion is at Saint-Omer,
right,
which is in the Pas-de-Calais. Yeah. And so I asked him when the buses left, you see, if how I would get there. So he said, you take a bus. And he told me it was just up the road there on the left-hand side. Take a bus there. And it takes, I think it's about 30 miles. You know, it was a local bus that went there, and he told me what time it was going. And so I said, well, you know, I've got quite a time to wait. Have you anything to suggest? No, he said, well, go and have a drink and a sandwich or poulet and chicken and that sort of chicken and chips. And so I went just across the road, then very, very clean looking place. And so I went in there, and very small. Not much bigger than this, as a matter of fact. And so I had chicken and chips, sat down, glass of wine. And across there were, in the corner, I saw there were quite a number of boxes, cartons, do you see, cardboard boxes. And after I'd finished my lunch, she said, well, the patron offered me another glass of wine and said, perhaps you'd like some company. So I said, well, you know, I was very, very naive. And so I said, well, what sort of company? Oh, well, she said, oh, you just wait there, I'll go. And she went out and came back a few minutes later with this lovely girl, you know, not dolled up at all, and not smarmy or anything like that, just a very, very pleasant French girl who sat down, and the proprietress, she gave us a glass of wine each. And so she said, well, you know, what are you doing? So I said, I'm waiting for the bus. And so she said, oh, you've got another hour to spare, you see, something like that. So perhaps you like the company? And I said, well, yes, I like the company. Very nice. Oh, she said, well, you know. And then she moved these boxes and pushed open a door, and there were stairs up to a room at the top. And so this girl invited me up there. And by this time, I think I was gathering, do you see, what it all meant. And so we went upstairs, and, you know, I lost my virginity there. Up there, and it was very, very pleasant indeed. I can't remember, I didn't have a lot of money on me, you know, I must have given her a couple of pounds or so.
Right.
And she was quite satisfied and very pleasant. I went downstairs. I didn't pay for the extra wine that we'd had, but I paid for me chicken and chips to the proprietress, and then off I went to the bus and got onto the bus. I remember sitting in the front seat of the bus, and everybody else that was in there had chickens and ducks and onions and market produce and all the rest, but they were going to Saint-Omer to to sell it to the market. So eventually got to Saint-Omer and went to the local, there was barracks there. Uh-huh. I went to the barracks and went there and said I wanted to join the Foreign Legion. And so I was introduced to the adjutant, and who said, well, you know, are you sure? So I said, yes, quite sure. Well, he said, we'll give you 24 hours to think about it. And so I stayed there overnight. And the next morning he called me in. I went in. By this time I had an interpreter. More for his sake, I think, than mine.
Right.
And so I think in the meantime, honestly, that he'd been in touch with Scotland Yard to find out, you know, Interpol business, you know, to find out if there was anything known about me, because I, you know, I was honest. I didn't have any, maybe I had some papers with me, you know, to say what my name was, but I feel sure that that's what he spent the time doing, getting in touch with Scotland Yard and finding that I didn't have a record and nothing was known against me. And
but you're able to get from Hampstead
to Saint-Omer
in one day.
Yes, oh yes, certainly. Certainly, one day.
Including a long wait for a bus.
It was the 10 o'clock from Victoria. You know, a couple of hours later, I was on the boat, or 2.5 hours later, I was on the boat, making it 12:30. So we were across there by 2:30, 3 o'clock, I suppose. And by 4 o'clock, I was on the 4:30, maybe 5 o'clock. It was in the summer, you see, so light until 9, 9:30, really.
Yeah.
So, yes, it was certainly
so
in one day.
So by 7 or 8, you were in the barracks. And
So, stayed overnight, and had quite a nice time drinking wine and having a meal in the barracks. You see, there were quite a number of recruits there, and the military. It was the colonial.
Mm.
And then,
so it's colonial infantry, was it?
Uh-huh. Colonial infantry. Mm. And so, early the next morning, 8 o'clock, you know, after breakfast, of coffee and a piece of bread and a piece of chocolate and sardines. I mean, that's the army in France for breakfast. And so, and then this lad took me along to the mayor, the adjutant's office again, and he said, have you made your mind up? And I said, yes, I'm still deciding. So I signed. And then he put me onto a train, gave me a parcel. Now, I can't remember, what would it be in? It was in a bag of some description. Right. And he said, that's your lunch, do you see? And took me to the train, got on the train, and here again, do you see, it was one of these wooden compartments, you know, half this size, with, and the seats were not plush covered, they were strips of wood, polished by behind, you know, and all that sort of thing, but it was very, very clean, very clean. And the door had a window, and there were windows on either side, you know, on both sides. And so off we started chugging, and eventually, the warmth of this sunny day came and got, you know, it was getting hot, so I opened the window a trifle. You could only open them about that much. And then he had this bag there. I had this bag there, you see. I was all alone.
Mm. In a, and you've been given a rail warrant or something? Or you've been
that's
say,
right,
yeah.
A rail warrant. I don't think I was. No.
No, they got
it. Wasn't.
Right.
It was non-stop to Toul.
Oh.
Non-stop to Toul.
Non-stop from Saint-Omer to Toul.
Which was quite a long journey.
Sure.
Mm. Yeah. I feel absolutely certain that the door was locked as well.
So this was what, a military train, or what was it?
No, this was a passenger train. Right. I'm sure it was a passenger train. I can see the long carriages. And so
just hold on a sec, we're coming to the end of this side.